terms of fraternal announcements, we have a number of visitors from other ecclesias here today, which I won't go through in detail, but suffice to welcome you all here, and particularly Brother Bruce, Sister Unhun, and the family. It's fantastic that you've accepted our invitation to come, and this might sound a little funny, but if you can take the greetings back to your home ecclesia when you go, share them with Brother Martin. We are to be led in the reading of James chapter 3 now by Brother Dean. And now I ask Brother Bruce to come forward and exhort us on the tongue. Brother Bruce.
Thanks, Brother Graham. Good morning, my dearly beloved brethren and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ, and thank you for your fraternal greetings, which I will pass on to the rest of the ecclesia. Martin's sitting at home listening in to, I don't know which ecclesia he's listening in this morning, or he probably already has. So think of him. He's in isolation right at the moment. Okay, well, brothers and sisters, I don't know about yourselves, but it is difficult for me, and I would suggest for you as well, to measure your spiritual growth. It's a very unusual concept, spiritual growth, because you're not quite sure what it is. I mean, for example, how do you measure your faith? Faith is a very almost atmospheric concept. So how do you know whether you're growing in Christ or treading water or going backwards? How do you know? And of course, in the ultimate sense, it's very difficult to answer that question. And only Christ will give us the absolute answer to that question at the judgment seat. But brethren and sisters, there are ways that we can measure, albeit bluntly, but we can measure our spiritual growth. And James offers that to us in chapter 3. But first, brethren and sisters, he's going to offend up to 50% of the audience this morning. Because he says in verse 1, "My brethren, be not many teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater judgment." Oh dear. So me being up here this morning means that I've just qualified for verse 1. And those of you who are leaders and teachers in Eastern Suburbs Ecclesia are in the same boat, that we will receive greater judgment. Now, I don't want mass resignations to occur straight after the meeting of all the arranging brethren and all the speaking brethren. We need them. We must have leadership, and we must be educated in the things of God. But we've got to be careful who we place in positions of leadership in the ecclesia. We've got absolutely critical, because you can go backwards ecclesially as well as individually if you have the wrong leaders. So it's not simply that we're measuring our spiritual growth individually, but we're measuring the sort of people who should be speaking from the platform and on the arranging brethren committee and all those sorts of things. And it takes a little bit of care and attention. In fact, I remember when I was young in the truth and there was the arranging brethren elections took place in our little ecclesia. And I can remember this quaint expression just prior to the elections, that would you give this prayerful consideration? And I thought, oh dear, I don't even know what that means. Prayerful consideration. It's a nice euphemistic, high-sounding thing, but what on earth does it really mean? And if I vote for Brother X and somebody else votes for Brother Y, is he not giving prayerful, and I am, or vice versa? I couldn't get my head around this. And so James chapter 3 fortunately comes to our rescue, and it does, in something as basic as elections for arranging brethren. I don't know whether you do this. They didn't do this when I was in Sydney because we just didn't have enough people. But you might elect people to be speakers within your meeting. Same thing.
What process do we use to fill out that prayerful consideration concept?
Well, let's have a look at it. Now,
I want to tell you, James does give everyone in this room a bit of an out.
A bit out of get out of jail free card. There is a little bit of that here. And it's found in verse 2.
For in many things we offend all. All of us, James included. If any man offend not in word, your speech, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body.
So James is saying, look, I'm pitching this awfully high. The remarks that follow in James chapter 3 are very, very high level. And we all fail, all of us. So it's not a case of where you read this and you think, oh, I'm not going to be able to do any of this. I'd really, you know. Well, we all fail. And we all fail with our tongue, which is the tool of trade of a teacher in the ecclesia. We all fail. It's the degree to which we are endeavouring to overcome that failure that is the thing that pleases God. And we'll talk about that to some degree in our exhortation. Okay. The other thing that the tongue illustrates to us is whether we're double-minded or single-minded. And insofar as we all fail, James is saying that we are all, at least to some degree, double-minded. Now, don't get scared about that. There is a way around this that James is going to offer us, and I want you to pay close attention to this. Okay, what do we mean by the term tongue? We're not being literal, it's just an organ of the body. What are we really alluding to here? What's James getting at? Well, it's a metaphor, essentially, for the real person, the inner man, the core of the individual. Look, I can come here and put on my nice, pious and devout face and my, you know, all of this, and you might say, oh, well, you know, lovely person he is. It could be a huge act. You know, my nice little public face, my mask. That's not the real person. You know what the real person is? It's what I say, how I express myself, the ideas, the adjectives that I use. Oh, I could bung it on Sunday, but what am I like at home? What am I like on Monday? You know the enemy of Sunday? Monday. Because the real person comes out on Monday. And too many people, I suppose all of us to some extent, too many people live their lives in compartments. They live a double life, which is what double-mindedness is all about. And sadly, we've had leaders in the Ecclesia of God who've lived double lives. They're phonies. What they are publicly is not who they really are. And the tongue is going to be the way that you determine whether you're leading a double life or not. Now, what's the antidote to double-mindedness? Well, James is going to give... And I really get excited about this one. Verse 17 just thrills me. No, without it... Let's just read it. The wisdom that is from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now, it's a mouthful, I know. But you dissect that and wow. The person whose tongue expresses all those things is the person you vote for on the arranging brethren. That's prayerful consideration. measure them against verse 17. Now, let me assure you, and James is telling us, we're all going to fail, but it's the extent to which we're prepared to imbibe verse 17 into our lives, and it's shown by our tongue and our expressions and our behaviours and our attitudes that makes all the difference. And the brother who makes a conscious effort to put verse 17 into practice is the sort of person that you would want to vote for and have as your leader. Notice that verse 17 is not really talking about wisdom by way of definition. It's talking of wisdom by way of demonstration. Wisdom is gentle. Well, that's a demonstrable thing. I mean, wisdom isn't gentle as a definitional thing. Wisdom is gentle in the way it expresses itself with the tongue. See the point? So it's all related to how you express yourself. Okay, and we talked on an earlier occasion of people who are angerholics. Remember we did the Churchillian thing? We'll fight them at the memorial meeting. Fight them in the car coming home. Fight them in the LN. Oh, we're never going to surrender. They don't get your vote. Churchill isn't a leader in the Ecclesia of God. You know who is? The one that expresses the proverb which says, a soft answer turns away wrath. He who controls his spirit is better than a man who can conquer a city. You try and conquer Perth. Wow, that would take a lot of effort. He's inferior to a man who controls his tongue and his spirit. And look at verse 4. Behold also the ships which, though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small rudder, whithersoever the governor listeth. The tongue is likened to a rudder of a ship. It's powerful. It can either send you off to the rocks, or it can send you away from the rocks. And then he says in verse 5, even so, the tongue, though it is little, it boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. Now there's, brethren and sisters, if you want a litmus test, if you want something objective about how you're going in Christ, there it is. If you're a braggart, you haven't imbibed the wisdom of God. If you're boasting great things, your tongue, you don't understand the truth. It's a high watermark, I know. But do you want it any less? You know, and we, a practical indicator of double-mindedness is the degree to which we boast about things that we ought to say nothing about. Oh, what a great deal that was. We sure took the price down on that guy. Do you think that's a godly way of treating other people? Where's the giving in that? I often read this in business plans because I have to do business planning for my job. And you get something like this, and it's arrogance, it's boasting. The next 5 years will see us the market leader in this business. Really? How do you know that? What law of the universe are you appealing to which allows you to say that with absolute confidence? In fact, I remember I was reading James and I was writing a business plan, and you had to put in all that trumped up stuff about, you know, the next 5 years will see us do these inflated things. And I actually thought, I don't feel comfortable writing that. So I said, you know, we hope to, in the next 5 years, be here, there and everywhere with our business. And my boss, who was a very lovely fellow, he's now retired, he said, oh, Bruce, come on, trump it up a bit. You know, we will. Little did he know that I actually wanted to say, God willing. I just walked out of his office thinking, wow, the culture's totally different here. But look, there are other things. I've actually been in a room where this has been said. It wasn't in an ecclesial context. I won't say where I heard it. Sisters particularly, I want you to hear this. And for those of us who are having difficulties parenting, and we might have children with learning difficulties, I want you to feel the pain of this statement. I'm quoting it. My children, this is by a woman, my children have just topped each of their classes for the second year in a row. And your child's got learning difficulties and you're hearing that. It hurts. Why is it said? It may literally be true, by the way. I'm not denying the statement. But why say it? And why say it in the context of somebody whose child is having difficulty learning to read? We treat our children sometimes as biological trophies. You know what I think we should do? I mean, maybe I'm being a bit extreme. I know that. I think we should practice invisibility with our children for our own sake, not for theirs necessarily, so that we don't brag. And bragging is a sign of the inner man, and the tongue is the method by which that happens. Bragging is a sign of the inner man expressing his culture and his wisdom and where he's got it. It's earthly, it's sensual, and it's devilish. They're not my words, there's James 3. Stop it. Just stop it. And I'll show you something now that demonstrates, brethren and sisters, the real power of the tongue to destroy. James gives us this in verse 6. Let's just read it out. And the tongue is a fire. Oh, you can't really see that. In fact, there's a good reason why you can't see that, but let's just read it first. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of Gehenna. Now, I don't know whether you might be made of better stuff than me. I can't understand that. It's written in very old English, and I don't really know what it means. I don't know what the word fire means. So we want to unpack this a little bit. There's a crescendo being established here, a building up of an idea. And you'll notice just from this one that I'm sure none of you can actually see that terribly well, and that's designed that way. Notice at the very top in microscopic print, you've got a fire. Now, I did it in microscopic print for a reason. It's almost not there. And then it crescendos into something bigger. A microcosm of iniquity among the parts of the body. We'll talk about that in a minute. It defiles the whole body. The font's getting bigger, notice. It sets on fire the course of a man's life and is itself consumed by the fire of Gehenna. Now, it doesn't take me to talk to an audience from Western Australia to talk about fire. I mean, we learn of all your bushfires back in the east, and we fortunately we didn't have too bad a season last year, but we know what fires are like, and I know that you know what fires are like. And you know how it starts? It's so nothing.
It's a fire, it's a match.
And it's talking about a person whose life isn't constrained by verse 17 and the wisdom and the culture of the truth. It's a person who's unrestrained. And the parents are doing zip about it. You know, it gets worse. Oh, you know, isn't my son cute that he just lit this match, or that he just knocked over something, or, you know, he's cute, isn't he? Well, no, he's a brat. But you see, when we define it and we brag and we play mind games because they're biological trophies, we don't see that what we're doing is starting something that's going to destroy. So this cute little kid, so-called, then grows up. A microcosm of iniquity among the parts of the body. The child is growing up, and then we use this euphemistic expression, oh, he's a colourful person. Which means he's a big brat. Okay, but we don't want to say that. So we say he's a colourful person. And here he is playing with more than just matches. It is a small world of iniquity among the parts of the body. He's going to places, either literally or in his head, that he shouldn't be going to. And he's imbibing stuff that is going to destroy him. Not immediately, but it's a small world of fire that's starting to make him odd. In fact, it gets worse. James says it defiles the whole body. So this cute little kid who was described as a colourful person is now, in his teens, a strange person. He's odd. He's a bit of a loner, a bit antisocial. Things aren't 100% here. And mum and dad by now are thinking, oh, you know, I did everything for him. I gave him the iPad and the motorbike and I did everything for him and look what he's done. Oh, really? You never taught him the things of God. He's unrestrained. And the fire is now starting to get out of control. And it sets on fire the course of a man's life. It's out of control now. There are broken relationships. There are children, perhaps, that are the legacy of those broken relationships that are wandering. And the thing is really... And the parents by now have just thrown their hands up and said, oh, well, I could never do anything with him and all that sort of stuff. Well, they could have, but they chose not to because he was their trophy. And then, lastly, says James, it is itself consumed by the fire of Gehenna. The whole thing is not only out of control, there's collateral damage. And you read in the newspaper that this fellow, there was a police chase and he got up to 160 kilometres an hour in a stolen car and wiped himself out on a telegraph pole. We don't know whether it was suicide or not. But his whole life is now destroyed. The tongue expresses the forces that are going on inside a person, and it's usually, if it's based not on the things of God, it's anger, it's disrespect, it's profanity, it's blasphemy, and it's deadly. And that's it. That's where James is saying, that's where it leads. You know, the tongue, you know, that little cute, isn't it? That's where it leads. get it early. Don't allow that influence in your family or in your ecclesia. It's not that we hate people, we want to help people, but we dare not put them in a position of power because that's where the power goes. Could that be Eastern Suburbs Ecclesia 5 years from? I pray not, and I'm not. There's nothing going on in my mind to even suggest that. But that could be Eastern Suburbs Ecclesia if the wrong teachers and leaders are there. And they'll receive greater judgment because this is what the power that they can wield, that it can destroy the household of faith. That's why it is so, so desperately important. Verse 7. For every kind of beast and of bird and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil. It is full of deadly poison. Therewith, bless we God on Sunday, even the Father, and therewith on Monday, in fact, probably not even Monday, in the car going home, curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. So from the same tongue comes these nice honeyed words from the platform. And then Monday morning, we're abrupt to the people who work for us and rude and obnoxious and taking down the other guy in a deal and all that sort of thing. My brethren, these things should not be, says James. You cannot, from the same font, have that degree of duplicity. In other words, double-mindedness will show itself in your behaviour, your actions and your tongue. Double-mindedness. And so we've got to control these things. Control, for example, our anger. It's a form of double-mindedness that can go there. And I told you the story, I forget which one it was, of the brother whose marriage is like that. And he has openly said to me, if only I could control or had controlled my anger, which is the use of the tongue. Out of the same mouth, verse 10, proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine can it bear figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. And then he gets to the nub of it. I love this. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. Who are you going to select, verse 13, for the arranging brethren? Well, it's the one who is wise, endued with knowledge, who shows out of a good conversation his works, and when he speaks, it's full of meekness and it's full of wisdom. Lovely. They're fathers in the ecclesia of God. They're the ones you want to choose for the platform. Not the dazzling speaker, not the erudite person who can put all the words together in such a silky smooth way, maybe the one who stumbles around with his speech, who's not particularly interesting and crafted in the English language. But when he speaks, brethren and sisters, it's so beautiful to listen to because he's expressing his mind, which has been out in the pasture of the things of God. You know, there's an expression, I don't know whether you've heard this expression. I cannot hear what you are saying because who you are is shouting at me. I cannot hear what you're saying because the person that you are is so ugly that it's distracting my attention. And yet the brother who stumbles with his words, perhaps, who's not, you know, the one who's going to win any competition for public speaking, but the one who just, you know, you could be on the edge of your seat just listening and wanting to take up and have his faith as your faith. Choose them, brethren and sisters. But here's something else. All right, you've got bitter jealousy, you've got selfish ambition in verse 14. Look at it. If you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. You know, if that is the wisdom that you're imbibing, if me being up here is part of my self-elevation and self-promotion, get me off that platform. Bitter envy, selfish ambition, that's where it leads. Division. Get me off the platform, brethren and sisters. Now, remember we said, but hold on, Bruce. James is saying we are all in this boat. Verse 2. It'd be a perfect man who's got it all under control. So are you telling me that we'll never have anyone speak? We just come to the meeting, we all go quiet because we dare not open a word, like Quakers or something? Is that the way we've got to conduct? No. You know, it's double-mindedness is where you've got bitter envying and selfish ambition that's destroying the ecclesia because you're pretending to be one person, but you're really motivated by something else. That's double-mindedness. And it shows in your speech. Blessing God, cursing men. That's double-mindedness. But look, James did say, as we said, we're all guilty of this. So how are we going to select anybody? I'll tell you how, brethren and sisters. The brother, I have seen this happen, by the way. The brother who speaks abruptly to you and hurts you and makes conscience of that sin, knowing that it's an expression of double-mindedness and he's been feeding on the wrong things that he would vent his anger in that way, who then goes up to you and quite genuinely and sincerely says, brother, the way I spoke to you was just totally unacceptable. Please accept my apology. He's single-minded. Because he's working on that double-mindedness and he's single-minded. And he'll get my vote, brethren and sisters. Because his attitude is in the right place. And I want to show you something else. I want to raise this one notch higher. Because it's a very real issue. You know, sometimes we play around with this issue and we don't give it the full force that it really deserves. That's the full force that it creates. Why don't we give it the full force that it deserves? You know where this is going? I want you to go now to 1 Peter chapter 3. Because in a similar context of your speech, Peter raises it one notch higher. Look at this in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word, that's their husband, of course, be won by the conversation of the wives. Now, I know that that means more than conversation, but it includes conversation, the tongue. All right? So that you've got an unbelieving spouse, in this case, the husband, and let the man be absolutely impressed by the behaviour and the conversation of the wife. That he would say, wow, I wouldn't want any other spouse other than the one I've got, she is just so wonderful. What is motivating her? Why is she, you know, I taunt her, I provoke her, I'm a bit of a rotter, and yet she doesn't spring back. What is it about her? Tell me more. I actually know a brother who came into the truth because of that. I'm not joking. His wife knew that her tongue was the thing that was going to change. Not, you know, chapter and verse and bang, bang, bang. He knew all that. He closed his mind off from it. But it was her and her speech. And when he did tell me that he provoked his wife hard. He resented Sunday morning. And he resented that she went to the meeting and the brother who picked her up to take her to the meeting opened the door for her in the car. He resented that. And she came in after the meeting and was a bit rude and abrupt, and she never sprang back. And his conscience was totally condemned by that. And it was verse 1. But let's read on. Verse 2. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Verse 4. But let it be the hidden man of the heart. Well, the hidden man of the heart is hidden, but it expresses itself through words. Let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet tongue, a gentle spirit, which is in the sight of God priceless. Verse 6. Look at the language of Sarah. I know this sounds very countercultural to Australians, but we've got to write this into our culture, brethren and sisters. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, and in her language, in her words, she called him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. I know that's a challenge, sisters. I know that that's difficult, but that's just the way it is. But if you think that that's challenging for you, sisters, look at verse 7 for us, brethren. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, and in our relationship with our wives, give honour to the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. That when you give your pious prayers on Sunday, that God says, I don't want to hear this. I am not listening to you. Because the attitude, the speech, the behaviour that you have towards the spouse that I have given you is contemptible to me. I don't care about your silky smooth prayers. I am not listening. Oh dear. Oh boy, are we in trouble? Our attitude, our speech in the most intimate of relationships is on the line. And God is saying, we have no relationship until you fix that. Until you change. Let's read on, verse 10. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips that they speak no guile, no deception, no double-mindedness. Let him zip the lip
He that will love life and see good days and have a beautiful relationship with me, let him just get that tongue and refrain from evil. Don't speak with a double tongue, he says, which is what guile is. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. Verse 12. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers, provided they get their house in order with the relationships that God's given them. The face of the Lord is against them who refuses to make conscience of their tongue.
It's a deadly thing. Verse 14, if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. You know, in Ecclesiastes, don't turn to this, in Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 4, I'm going to read it from the NASB, and I'm not necessarily going to be nasty in making this reference. I just want you to soak this up. It says, speaking of the natural man, the man who's not motivated by the things of God, it says, every labour which is performed is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbour. Now let's unpack that. That means out there, and hopefully not in here, but out there, everything that's out there is built on rivalry between a man and his neighbour. Now, you know that. I mean, we live in a free enterprise system. I'm not bagging that out. It has some success, you know. Capitalism. What is capitalism at its core? Well, it's rivalry between two competitors in a marketplace, isn't it? And it works. We're all employed in a vibrant economy. But you imagine, if that motivates everything that you do on Monday through to Friday, and how you can outdo your competition, and how you can win by seeing him lose, if that's everything that that is built on, you imagine you're imbibing that Monday through to Friday, you come in on Sunday morning, and you're smeared with all that. You're grubby with all that. And you come in and you treat others with that, in taking the same context with you from the world into here. Brethren, sisters, we've got to go and have a wash at the door. We've got to get all that grease and muck off us and rewrite the whole script. And the tongue is going to be the way in which we show that. Now, let me tell you something. This wisdom, well, let's let James tell it. This wisdom descendeth not from above, verse 15. Oh, in 1 Peter, sorry. James 3, verse 15. This wisdom descendeth not from above. It's earthly. It's sensual. Sensual means the opposite of spiritual. It's devilish. It's demonic. That is James's assessment of everything that happens that we have to be part of Monday through to Friday. It's earthly, it's sensual, and it's devilish. And we've got to have a firewall when we go to work and in other places, an emotional firewall to protect us so that it doesn't seep in and become us. It's earthly, it's sensual, it's devilish, it's full of envy, verse 16, it's full of strife. There is confusion and every evil work. And I put to you, brethren, sisters, I put to you that the Ecclesia of God doesn't have a good track record in this area. That a lot of our division is built. Division, I think I said that. A lot of our divisions are built on verse 16. Envy, strife, confusion, every evil work. I heard this story. I hope I lighten it up a bit. This brother was... This didn't happen, by the way. Brother was stranded on a desert island out in the South Pacific somewhere for years, you know. This little atoll, and it's just him. And for years, and, you know, Eventually the Royal Navy, or whoever it is, which always comes along to fix the situation, comes, and there he is on his desert island, and he's finally rescued. It's just him. And he's all straggy clothes, they're all horrible, and, you know, he looks a mess. And he's finally, the Navy comes, and they pick him up, and they say, okay, so how's it been? He said, oh, you know, glad you've come. Get back to society, my home. He said, oh, you've got three huts. Yeah, I built three huts.
Hmm.
Okay. What's the first hut? Oh, that's my home. Oh, right. Okay, so what's the second hut? He's by himself. What's the second hut? Oh, that's my ecclesia. Oh, okay. Righto, so you go there Sunday and Wednesday. Is that right? Bible class Wednesday and memorial meeting Sunday. Oh, yeah. Well, what's the third hut? Oh, that's the ecclesia I used to belong to. Well, I thought it was funny anyway. See what I'm saying? Division. It just, you know... I was attracted to the truth for its intellectual power. I belong... Anyway, we won't go there, but I belong to a mainline church. And it was just all fluffy stuff. And here was a fellow teaching me out of the Bible stuff that was just, wow, concrete, powerful. You know, the promises to Abraham, I'd never heard of those things. I'd heard of Abraham, but he was just somebody that you just hear about. Promises to Abraham and Genesis 12, that all just shone. You know, I was just on fire. It was fabulous. And then the Davidic, honestly, I'm not making this up. I'm not trying to puff it all up. This is in the Bible. Wow, why wasn't I ever taught this? And this is great. But you know what the biggest problem we've got? We're so intellectually into it that we forget that, well, we can fight amongst our, big elephants can fight and make a lot of damage. And we've done that, sadly. And we've done it because of a worldly-based wisdom that's built on verse 16. For where envy and strife, there is confusion and every evil work. And brethren and sisters, it's getting worse in some respects because it's turning around. We now have, as you know, out there, what is the mantra out there these days? Universal tolerance. Tolerate everything and everybody. As long as they don't hurt you, you don't judge them. You watch. That's going to be one of the big issues, brethren and sisters, that's going to affect us if Christ does not return soon. This universal tolerance. There is no absolute truth. There are many paths to God. Why don't we practice open fellowship with all the other churches? Why are we so elitist? I think that has an endearing sound to it, but it's wrong. Do whatever you please as long as it doesn't hurt anyone. All those things, brethren and sisters, are devilish. But let's now unpack verse 17, which I want to leave you with before we get to breaking bread and drinking wine. Because this is just so beautiful. And it's so positive. And I don't want to leave you with all that negative stuff. The wisdom that is from above that will shape your speech if you imbibe it is first pure. It means truly pure. It means single-minded. It means sincere. It means genuine. You're focused. It's your life. Wholly devoted to God. Is first pure, then peaceable. Means promoting peace and loving peace. Now we're going to unpack this a bit further, but I want to play with the scriptures here, not in a malignant sort of way. I want to change this scripture slightly. I want to paraphrase it slightly. Delete the word wisdom. Because it's not strictly wisdom. Wisdom isn't gentle. Wisdom creates gentle people, right? There's no such wisdom known as gentle, right? It's an attribute of those who have understood the word of God and made it part of them. It's the outshowing of what they've done back in their study and all that sort of stuff. So the person
who has been listening to God, here's how you're going to measure his progress. Is he pure? Is he wholly devoted to God? Is he a peace-loving person?
Now, we can do all sorts of things here. Firstly, and I want to give the honour where it's due,
Christ, you could put Christ there. Christ is pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, and so on.
Is he not? Why don't we substitute your own name? Your own name.
Bruce is pure, peaceable, gentle. I don't want to read on because I haven't scored very well
here. You know, my innings isn't very high so far. Do you see the point? The brother that I'm going to vote for, who speaks from the platform, is the arranging brother.
Is he pure? Is he peaceable? Is he gentle? And of course, as James has already told us, well, we're not all going to fulfil this, but is he at least working towards that? Is his spiritual progress mapped against those things? That he really takes that to heart?
And brethren and sisters, from time to time, I think we ought to all put our names there and say, is this me? Is this my whole bearing in life? I had the very fortunate experience of meeting, just before she passed away, she was an elderly sister. Her name was Sister Davies, which means nothing to you, but she means everything to me. We actually shared the same birthday, and which has got nothing to do with anything too, I suppose, but... But we had a real bond. This is when I first came into the meeting. In fact, just for your benefit, for a bit of historical footnote here, the Cabramatta Ecclesia in Sydney was due to this little old sister. And she was a widow. And she was about 140, or at least she, you know, and she huddled in and she was sort of stooped and she came into the meeting. She never said a word. She was such a lovely old dear. And what happened is behind the scenes... when she was a bit younger, single-handedly, could you believe, she was out in the back blocks of Sydney, which is all suburbs now, and she used to gather all the local children and have a Sunday school. And she was the teacher. And it got to the point where, well, she couldn't teach them all. She just rounded them up, all these farm kids. And so, she sort of said to a few people, look... could you give me a hand? You know, I've got all these kids that want to go to Sunday school. And the genesis of Cabramatta Ecclesia was that. She started it. Because what happened is other brethren and sisters from not nearby ecclesias, but the nearest ecclesia, which was a good half hour away, said, oh, okay, well, look, we'll see what we can do, but we've got to get back to the meeting, and, you know, it's a bit of a logistical nightmare, but we'll see what we can do. And then somebody said, look, why don't we cut out all this travel? Why don't we start an ecclesia? And that's the true story of Cabramatta Ecclesia, how it started. And anyway, so she used to come in and she'd sit down and she shuffled around. And but you know what the beautiful thing about this sister? If she didn't attend a meeting, you would go out and drive out to her little cottage, because there must have been something seriously wrong. She would come, rain, hail or shine, she would be at me. Her consistency, you know, her devotion to God was so exemplary. And she would just be there. And that's the sort of person that we're talking about here. Peaceable. Promoting peace and loving peace. We'll go on. Gentle. Humbly patient even when false accusations occur. Easily entreated. Look at these two lovebirds down the bottom. Easily entreated. Obedient, compliant, enthusiastic to comply. It, you know, here it is, brethren and sisters. It's when your wife, I think we mentioned this, was it last night? I can't remember. You know, why don't we go for a walk after the meeting? I'd love to go for a walk in the sunshine after the meeting. And you think, I don't want to go for a walk. It's not where I want to be. Easily entreated is the sort of person who doesn't put up walls all the time. He says, okay, honey, if you want to go there, so do I. Can we take an umbrella? It might rain. That's easily entreated. Not angular, not brittle, not the sort of person, oh, you know, if you ask anything, there's always a good reason or not a good reason for saying no. Okay, let's move on. Full of mercy and good fruits. It means forgiving and compassionate. Without partiality, undivided, no competing values, and without hypocrisy. This is the sort of person that we are to model ourselves upon. And then lastly, brethren and sisters, before we take the emblems, we go to verse 18. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. They're peace makers. And that doesn't come easily. If you're a peace maker, then there has to be the absence of peace that you've got to make peace. I knew a brother who was exactly like that. When he walked into the room, everyone just settled. I never saw him get angry, ever. And he was provoked. His whole bearing, everything that he did and the way he went about it was built on peace and harmony within the ecclesia. I didn't say compromise, by the way. He was straight down the line with regard to the truth. But peace was something that he valued extremely high. What he did and the way he went about it was all full of bringing peace. Okay, we're now going to eat bread and drink wine. And we're going to remember the man who, verse 17 and verse 18, he was the embodiment of. Let us, brethren and sisters, as we now remember our Lord, make chapter 3 and verse 17 our culture. Remember what we said about culture last night? It's the behaviours, it's the speech, it's the attitudes that we either encourage or discourage. Well, let's make verse 17 and verse 18 our culture. Now, brethren and sisters, we fail. And James says we fail, and he notes it. But don't give up on those two verses. Make it your life's work and build your ecclesias, or this ecclesia, around those two beautiful verses.